Well, hold on page 138 in Baba Basra, Os Memtes. Here we begin the famous stories of Rabba Baba Hum, all kinds of stories of giant waves and giant creatures and all kinds of interesting and fascinating things. We get into it because the Mishnah had talked about a person sells a boat. What is and isn't included, so therefore he has Rabba Baba Hum's first few stories involve boats and sea travel. The idea behind all these stories, so Rashbam says that the purpose of all these stories is, it tells us, some of them tell us, Mo Rabu Ma'asecha Hashem, how great and tremendous are Hashem's works, the giant waves, the giant creatures, etc. Some of them tell us about Schar of Tzadikim in the future. For example, we're going to talk about later about the Leviathan, the Sher Abar. We're going to talk about various other creatures that are meant as a reward for the Tzadikim lost at Lavi. Some of them, he goes on to say, explain. We have Psukim in Sefer Eov. We talked about Eov earlier in the Masechta, where Hashem tells Eov that you're complaining about how I run the world. You don't even realize that there are these gigantic creatures that I created for a purpose, and you have no idea what their purpose is. So ultimately, the Rashbam says, all sichas tamid chachamim, sichat Talmud, whenever you have something, even the casual speech of chachamim, then it needs to be learned, and therefore there's a purpose to these stories. A lot of mafoshim, there's been entire svarim written on symbolic meanings in the various stories, and we'll go through some of them. There's also a general question that the mafoshim discuss, are these things that actually happen in the physical world or not? So here we're going to have, for example, the Rabba Baba Hanna is talking about that seafarers told him about tremendous waves and about tremendous, and he describes seeing gigantic creatures and so on and so forth. Are we describing things that he or the seafarers who talked to him or whatever actually saw in the physical world, or are we talking something symbolic? So there also you have a wide variety of different explanations of it. Some mafoshim take the view that he actually literally saw them, and some of them talk about that maybe, for example, Chidush HaGaonim on the side over here has some long explanations about it, that basically, for example, there are tremendously large creatures in the world, such as whales. So fine, the Rabba Baba Hanna is talking about them in gigantic terms, much larger than they really are, but nevertheless, the core of what he's saying about these gigantic creatures is something. Okay, you know, maybe the average person wasn't familiar with them in those days, but they do in fact exist. Other mafoshim talk about that these can be visions or dreams that Rabba Baba Hanna had in which he saw these creatures, and they're meant to impart a message min hashamayim. There's hybrid views as well, that after all, the Gemara is talking about real things that exist, but the Gemara is not just Sam telling us fish stories and things, they also, each of them has many, many deeper layers of meaning in it. So there's a couple of well-known verplach about it, along the lines of, they tell, for example, that one time a minister of the Tsar asks one of the Rabbanim in Russia, I've heard the story about Tzemach Tzedek, I've heard it about various other Rabbanim, that he asks, you know, what about these kinds of stories? I mean, they seem ridiculous, some of the Goyish minister says, some of these stories that we have over here. And the Rav tells him, imagine, for example, that Chas V'Shalom, the Tsar, were to issue a gzera against the Jews of Russia, let's say expelling them all from their houses, a poet might say in poetic terms that one drop of ink washed away millions of people. And we would all understand exactly what he meant. A future generation is going to have no idea, and they're going to think that's impossible. So the same way, the expressions and the exaggerated descriptions in this Gemara, they meant something too in Rabba Baba Hanna's times, and in the Gemara's times, we don't necessarily know the key to the meaning, but that doesn't make them any less true and any less meaningful for all of that.
If he says, I saw, and he was conscious when he said, I saw.
So that's the thing. I saw could also mean, for example, I saw in a vision. In fact, we're going to have the first couple of them is he says, Ishtolim Chuseyama, seafarers, sea voyagers told me. But for example, the third one, he's going to say, L'didi Chosili, I saw. And in fact, the Ritva understands that means, for example, that he saw it in a dream. So there can be a difference. Some of them he was told by people of what they experienced, and others of them would be things that he himself saw in a vision. In a similar way, there are a couple of other verplach like that, similar ideas that various Rabbanim explain along those lines, that sometimes in a certain generation, you use an expression, and everybody at that time is very clear on what it means, but then as society changes and everything, then the key to that gets lost and nobody understands anymore. So the Gemara starts off, Omer Rabba, so here we hear it, just says Rabba, and the Gemara says Rabba Babachana. Ishtolin Chuseyama, sea voyagers told me as follows. I galad matbal a sphinta, a wave that threatens to sink a ship, mischazi kitzutzisid nurechivalti beresha. It appears as having a fringe of white fire at its tip. We hit that wave with a club, the chokikala, that has engraved on it the following names of Hashem, ekya asher ekya, ka, Hashem svokas, omen sela, the nayach, and then the sailors told me, then the wave calms down as a result of that. So starting with what Mao Shaw explains on this. So like this. The Gemara tells us in Yevamos that one time Rabbi Akiva was on a ship that was wrecked, and everybody thought that he had drowned, but then he managed to make it through safely, and he explained afterwards. He told how what happened. He said, "Dapshal sin in his damnali, a plank. I managed to grab a hold of a plank of the ship, and I held on to it." And every wave that came over to me, ninati loy roshi, I bent my head so that it would wash over me and not harm me. And based on this, the Chacham used that as a metaphor. If a person is being beset by Rishoyim, then he should tackle, bend his head and be willing to be flexible and then temporarily subjugated to him so that they don't destroy him. So in other words, all tsaris, the tsaris and the golos and everything are compared to waves. So now the goyim are always threatening to destroy us, like waves are threatening to sink the ship over here. And Hashem calms them down and weakens their power, so they're not able to. Marsha, in fact, brings. We actually find a medrash where the Rishoyim are compared to waves like that. There's a medrash that says each wave, you know, you look at the sea, and each wave comes in big and towering, and it looks like it's going to flood the whole area, but then it breaks harmlessly on the seashore, and that's that. And then the second one, meanwhile, does the same thing, and each one of them breaks like that. The same way the Medrash says, each Rosha, in their generation, each one thinks, I have the secret, I know, here we're coming up to Purim now, Haman thought in his times, Pare thought in his times, Amalek, etc. Each one thought, we're gonna accomplish what our predecessors couldn't. And each one of them, and each one of them breaks and never learns from the previous one. So now, Rabbi Baba Chana is saying that we're in Golos, like a ship that's tossed in a stormy sea and being threatened by the waves. Each time there's a different wave, a different Rosha that threatens us. This white fire on the top of it, says Marsha, refers to the Tsar of that nation. Every nation we know has a Tsar, has a Malach and Shemayim, and they're compared to fire, to elemental fire, which is white. So what do we do? How do we withstand those waves that are going to sink the ship? So all we can rely on. So we hit it with a club, and that club has inscribed on it names of Hashem that show how in each golos Hashem has protected us, and the waves never were able to sink us. First, you have Eke Asher Ekeh by Paroi. Hashem sends Moshe to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and what's your name? And he says, Ekya Asher Ekya. Hashem promised, I'm with you, I'll be with you in all future tzoras. So that's the Ekya Asher Ekya. Then we have Ka, is the name that's with us in Golos. As we know, Ein Hashem Shalom, Ein Akiseh Shalom, that Hashem's name and his throne are not complete as long as Amalek has not been destroyed. So therefore, the name Yud Kei represents that Hashem has an agenda for the world, and it's not complete as long as there's the waves of Amalek that still threaten us. Then we have Hashem Tzvokos, is the name that has to do with Geula, from all our troubles. Goyaleinu Hashem Tzvokos Shmoy, as the Pasuk says, as we say right before Shemina Esrei. And then the Omen represents the Emuna that we had in Golos, and the Omen Yeheshme Rabba that we say, which the Gemara tells us elsewhere, the whole world would fall apart if it wasn't for, among other things, the Omen Yeheshme Rabba that we say after learning Agabda. So with that, Vinayah, and with that, the wave calms down, and we're safe from that, from that oppressor. And then eventually the next wave comes, and the cycle keeps on repeating until Mashiach comes. That's Mao Shaw's explanation of it. Then you have the Vilna Gaon has a small sefer called Pirush HaKama HaGadol, where he goes through many of these stories of Rav Bava Chana and explains them. It's been some 30 years ago, one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Baltimore of Aaron Feldman adapted it into English and published it under the name The Juggler and the King, which is the theme of the third story over here. So the Vilna Gaon's explanation is basically as follows. First of all, he explains like this. We're going to see when we get to the third story, the Gemara is going to quote a phrase from the Pasuk, Yalo Shemayim Yehuda Tehoimus, that we have in Kapitel Kuf Zayin, which the last part, a large part of that Kapitel talks about the danger at sea. Yehuda Hayom Ba'aniyas, Osim Alachim Mayim Rabim, etc. And then they're threatened by a storm, and then Vayitzaku Al Hashem, and the Eivishter saves them. So he says, actually, the first few stories over here are actually going in order of those Pesukim. So the first story over here has to do with the phrase in the pasuk Yodeh Hayom Ba'aniyas. Therefore, it's the Yodeh Hayom, those who go down into the sea, who tell this, and the pasuk continues Vayomer Vayamid Ruach Sa'ara, that Hashem made a storm wind come. So therefore, they're telling him about the stormy wind that whips up waves that are threatening to sink the ship. He has it that the ship, Eitz Yosef over here excerpts it at length. So he says that the ship represents the neshama in the body, and the waves are the Yetzirah. Then you have, so what's the fire at the tip of the wave? We find in other places in Shas where the Yetzirah is compared to a fire. The Gemara tells there's a story in Masechta Kiddushin where Rav Amram successfully withstood the Yetzirah and it left him like a pillar of fire, representing, in other words, he had a tremendous burning Yetzirah and he was able to expel it. So therefore, here you have the Yetzirah has fire at its tip, but it's white fire. White is always a sign of Tara. So it represents the Yetzirah comes pretending to be the good guy, the white clean guy. Now, the Vilna Gaon goes on and says, now you also have the problem of Shibud Malchus that Marsha was talking about. We also have the problem, besides our internal Yetzirah, we also have the external pressure from the Goyim who are trying to convince us to give up Yiddishkeit. So again, all these names represent, similar to what Marsha said, that these various names on the club representing that Hashem promised to protect us and to see us through. Again, Ekia, same thing, that it means that Hashem said, I'll be with you in all future Golias. Yud-Kei is also Ein Hashem Sholem, meaning, in other words, that Hashem, so to speak, owes it to us to get us out of this, because until that, his name and his throne are not complete, and therefore Hashem is not going to allow that to continue indefinitely. Hashem Tzvokas, he learns a little differently, means, in other words, we are the Tzvois, we are the army of Hashem, and Ein Melech B'loi Am, there needs to be, in order for Hashem to be the Melech, to have Kisei Sholem, he has to have a nation that's going to survive Golos. And the Omen Omen Sela again represents the Omen Yeheshmeid Abba and the Emuna, the Omen that we say at the end of Brachas, and the Nayach, and then the storm calms down.
It must have been an understanding when Hashem said that he thought it was going to be in the future Golos also.
No, he did. There's actually, you look in the printed Rashi, you'll find a parenthetical note inserted in Rashi over there when Moshe says to Hashem, what am I going to tell them? Ekya, that I'm going to be with you in future Golos. Isn't the trouble they're having now hard enough? And Hashem says, fine, just tell them Ekya Shulchani Aleichem. Yeah, there's a parenthetical note printed in Rashi over there. It's not that Moshe was able to realize something that Hashem didn't. To begin with, Hashem didn't mean for Moshe to tell them, I'm going to be with you in future Golias. He's telling it to Moshe for Moshe's ears only, but Moshe misunderstood and thought that it's something he's supposed to tell the Jewish people. But in any case, here we're talking about in future Golias, and we already have. We're long past Golias and Tzayim. We're already in several Golias later, and therefore we can already know there's the Ekya Asher Ekya that Hashem has promised to be with us in every Golias. Then you have... So then you have as follows. One of the Sfarim that's printed that goes through the Zagadis of Rav Bava Chana is a sefer called Rapduni Batapochim. So he has an explanation that says that the Yetzirah, again, that the wave represents the Yetzirah, but it means, in other words, when the Yetzirah is arguing and trying to convince us to follow him, there are three main arguments he used. First of all, the fact that he has a head of white and Sutsisid Nurikti Varti Bereisha represents Reisha also means first. What comes first into a person? We know the Yetzirah comes into a person when he's first born. The Yetzirah comes only later and only finishes coming in by a person by mitzvah. So therefore, the Yetzer Hara argues, I have precedence. I'm older. My hair is whiter compared to the Yetzer Tzoy. Therefore, you ought to be following my advice. Then he also argues another point of white is also representing old age. Look, how long are you going to be mutching zich in Golis already? You're already in Golis, 1900 years. You've gotten old and gray in Golis. You may as well give in, is a second argument. There's an Eidish there, but fine, who says it's the same one in Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, so fine, you'll follow me, and then later on you'll come back to the Eidish. You can wait till you're white and old haired, and then you'll do tshuva. So we counter him again with all these various names of Hashem, showing that Hashem is very much with us, and the Yud K represents that Hashem created Olam Haba with the Yud and Olam Hazeh with the Hey. So Olam Haba comes first. So don't think we're not going to follow you and then get ourselves out of Olam Haba. And if need be, as the Gemara tells us, the Gemara has an expression in Brachas that if a person is really troubled by the Yetzer Hara, one thing you can do is you should first learn Torah, and if that doesn't work, then say Krishna, and if the absolute last ditch thing, Yazkir lo yoyim ha-missa, the Gemara says, remind him that eventually you're going to die. And the Gemara says, the Gemara brings in that connection, a pasuk, the doimu sela, a person is going to be silent forever until Mashiach comes. So therefore, that's the sela over here. If the last ditch effort, beat back that Yetzirah if you need to, by reminding him that you're not going to be in this world for that long, and you don't have time for him and all of his shtick. And then there are various other explanations. One interesting one, the Sefer Pele Yoyetz quotes the Alter Rebbe. I don't know where in the Alter Rebbe's writings or Maamorim it is, but basically that the club over here represents Avodas HaTfila, Shas Tzloisa, Shas Krova is the expression in the Zohar. The time of Tfila is a time of war. So we're literally taking a club and then swinging it against the Yetzer Hara and against everything else that's besetting us, we're davening on behalf of the Eibush, the Eki Asher Eki, that the Eibush is with us in Golos, and we're not just davening for ourselves to get out of Golos, we're davening for the Eibush to get out of Golos, and so forth with the other names. Next story. Omer Rabbi Babachana, Ishtoli Nechuse Yama, the seafarers told me, Bein Gala Legala, speaking of these waves, between one wave and the next, Tlas Mea Parasi, is 300 parasa in distance. A parasa is about 2.5 or 3 miles, so 300 parasa would be something on the order of 800 or 900 miles or so. Many times, of course, the Gemara does use such numbers in a bit of an exaggerated way, so it doesn't necessarily literally mean 300 parasa. With that said, all the different Mephoshim have different takes on why he uses that figure. One thing in general, the Maharal points out with a lot of these Gemaras that use large numbers like that, many times the Gemara is not talking about the physical size of something, but rather the ruchnis, like the size of it, like the maximum extent that it could have if its gashmius completely reflects its ruchnius. It usually doesn't. Things in our world don't usually fully, faithfully reflect their ruchniistic source, and therefore they come out smaller and weaker and whatever. But you have, the expression in Rambam, in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, it was just now in Perek Echad, and a few days ago in Shlosh HaPrakim, you have Chomer versus Tzura. You have the ideal form of something, which is the Tzura, versus you have the actual material that's made out of, which is the Chomer, and usually the result is that the combination of Chomer and Tzura is not quite as powerful or intense or great or whatever as the Tzura by itself, which would be like, for example, a Malach. So in the same vein, in other words, the Gemara is talking more in the sense of the Tzura, whereas in our world, when it's combined together with the Chomer, then we don't see it necessarily as large. With that said, also, the Rishdva points out that the parasis we're talking about over here might be our sea parasis, which he says a sea parasa is 1/20th the size of a land parasa. So in that case, we have to scale it down by a factor of 20, so then the 300 parasa, instead of 800 or 900 miles, it comes out to 40 or 45 miles or so. Still a lot, but not unreasonably large. Okay. Anyway, so it's 300 parasa. The rumor de gala plus mea parasi, and the height of each wave, the sailors continue until Rav Avachana, is also 300 parasa. Zimna chode hava az linen ba'urcha. One time we were walking on the road, the dalinen gala, and a wave lifted us up. Ad chazina ben marbata de kichla zuta, until we were able to see the place, the resting place, the location, the seat basically in heaven of a star, the Kochva Zuta of a small star, the smallest of the stars, to have a Knivza Aboin Grivi Bizra de Chardala. It was a space, the size in which you could plant 40 kur of mustard seeds. Rashbam points out, mustard seeds being tiny, you plant much more of them in an area than you do of any other of any other one. So in other words, if it was wheat, for example, to an area of 40 kur would be quite large, an area where you can plant 40 kur of mustard seeds would be smaller. So the wave lifted us up until the point where we saw the location of that star, and that was the size of it. The Idalin and Tse, had the wave lifted us up any further, they continue, have a Maklin and Mehevla. We would have been burnt by the heat of it. And then they continue, V'ramyala Gala Kola L'chavaka. Each wave then calls out to the next one. Rashbam points out the fact that we said the waves are 300 parasa apart. The chiddush of it is, in other words, that they can hear each other's voice from that distance, from a distance of 300 parasa. So each one calls out to the other one. V'omralon, it says, Chavarti, my friend, mi shavkas midi v'amav l'shatafte, have you left anything over in the world that you haven't washed away? V'nesi anan v'necheve, and then I will come and destroy it. Like Marsha had said before about the goyish rulers in each generation, that each one thinks, I'll be the wave that finally overpowers the Jewish people. So the waves now, the sailors are saying the same thing. Or the Girsa in the printed Gemara, v'nesi anan v'necheve, that I will then come and destroy it. Allah, but the first wave answers no. Pukhazi Gvurta Demarich, go out and see the strength, the power of your master, of the Eibishter, the Afilukim Lechuta de Chola Lesta Over. None of us can even cross a thread's width of sand on the beach. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ha'osi Le'siro Nu'um Hashem, the Navi Yirmiyah says to the Jewish people, do you not fear me, says Hashem, Inni Ponei Le'sachilu, do you not tremble in my presence, Ashestamti Chel Gvul Layom, that I made the sand as a boundary for the sea, Chok Olam, as an eternal law, V'lo Yavrunu, and they can't cross it. So even though, yes, it looks like each one of us are so high, and it looks like we could destroy a large part of the world, Rashbam says, why are they even threatening to destroy it? Rashbam says, because the people's sins, so we should have the right to destroy the world, but the first wave answer is no, the Eibishter doesn't give me permission. Hashem makes it that I can't even, as big and towering and powerful as I am, I can't even cross that tiny little strand of sand. So Maharsha talks about that like this. Again, the waves, for the same reason, represent the various nations that harass us in Golos. And when we say that there's 300, that there's 300 parasa between one wave and the next, and each one is 300 parasa in height, the Gemara tells us in various places that the average person can walk 10 parasa in a day. So therefore, 300 parasa divided by days comes out to 30 days, 1 month. So it represents, in other words, that each one of these goyish rulers has one particular month when their mazel is the most powerful. For example, Maharsha gives examples. Pare's mazel was mazel tfle, the sheep, Aries, which is why Yetzias Mitzrayim Dafka took place in that month to show that Hashem is more powerful than him. Nebuchadnezzar, we find, is compared to a lion, and he destroyed the Bais Mikdash in Chodesh Av, whose mazel was a lion. So each of them has their own mazel that's in power for one month, and therefore metaphorically they're compared to a wave that's the size of 1 month's journey. Then, as far as the height of the height of 300, specifically, Maharsha says, refers specifically to Malchus Edom, to the Roman Empire, who also has a sar, and they've been much larger. They've lasted much longer than any other Golus. So far, 1900 plus years in Golus Edom compared to every other Golus was maximum a couple hundred years. Now they continue. They say, one time we were going on the road and a wave lifted us up. So in other words, Maharsha explains like this. Edom in particular, they don't have any independent power of their own. Unlike the other nations, which have, they just gave them a certain degree of power, and sometimes they become powerful and use it to oppress us. The Romans is exclusively, their power is based strictly on the schus of the Jewish people, or the opposite. We find all the way back. Yitzchak Avinu tells Esav, when Esav is complaining, how come you gave Yaakov the brachas? So Yitzchak gives him a short bracha, and he tells him, V'hoyaka, you can be subject to your brother, but when you have reason to complain, when the Jewish people are not following Torah and mitzvahs, then you'll be able to break off his yoke, and then you'll be able to be, and then you'll be able to be powerful. We find even Marshall refers to a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says when the Romans were first becoming powerful and they were trying to defeat the Greeks, they wound up having to make an alliance with the Jews, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to do it. So now we're saying, therefore, so now the wave lifts them up, representing, in other words, that that Esav is saying, you know what? Let me lift you up. Let's join forces. That same Gemara in Avodah Zarah explains that the Romans made a deal with the Jews. We'll have a co-equal kingdom. Either at any given time, we'll supply the kings, the top rulers, and you'll supply the next level of officers, or the other way around. Like we find by Paras and Madai, they had the same kind of arrangement. So the Romans offered that to the Jews. So that's represented in Rabbi Baba Chana's story over here, that the wave is going to lift us up. And what do we see over there? We see a tiny star representing the tininess of what Esav really is. Hine kotin nesaticha b'goyim, the pasuk says about Esav. You are really intrinsically only small. How did they become so great and such a world-circling empire? Is because, as we're saying, because the Jewish people is Averis that gave them power. Especially because it's brought in Midrashim that the Sarshal Esav is none other than the Samach Mem, who the Yetzirah, the Malach HaMavis, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. So therefore, our Averis give him more power. So we see that area is an area where you could plant 40 saw of mustard seeds. Mustard is bitter. So that represents that the tzaddikim plant tzedakah in the world. Meanwhile, the rishoyim plant bitter things in the world. So therefore we realize that, you know what, we better be careful not getting too close to them. So the sailors say in the Mashal, if we had been lifted any higher, meaning if we had really taken them up on that offer and continued to amalgamate with them and then join forces with them, then we would have been destroyed in Golus, Chas v'Shalom. So now what happens is each wave calls out to the next one, meaning throughout the rest of the time of Golos, each Rosh have never learns from the previous one that the previous one failed and he's not going to do any better. So he says, have you left anything of the Jewish people that you haven't destroyed that it's going to be my turn to do? And they answer back, and the first wave answers once they're in the Olam HaEmes and they know the truth. They say, you know what, Hashem's power, Hashem is constantly protecting the Jewish people in Golos, as the famous Mashal, one sheep among 70 wolves, and look how great, how powerful is the shepherd that protects it, and therefore we have no ability to overcome because the Jewish people have tzaddikim who are compared to sand, and therefore we have no ability to overcome them, and neither will you. There's an interesting medrash, by the way, in that connection that says, not specifically about the Romans, it says about Paray, actually, the Paray of Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's a medrash that says that after Kriyas Yamsuf, he stands by the gate of Gehenim, and whenever the next anti-Semitic ruler comes in, then Paray says, you should have learned from my example, not to start up with the Jews. So in the same vein over here, then, one wave says the same kind of thing to the other. We'll talk about the Vilna Gaon's explanation. So he again says that the waves over here represent the Yetzer Hara, like before. So he says that it means how long the Yetzer Hara has many different shluchim in the world, some internal and some external. And again, because each month has a different mazel, therefore again we're representing that by the fact that each wave is 300 parasha away from the next one, and 300 parasha and 300 parasha in height, representing a 30 days journey.
What's internal and external? What does that
mean? Meaning, a person has an internal Yetzirah, and that Yetzirah in turn has Shluchim. The Gemara has the expression, for example, based on the pasuk that Ein v'Liba Tres Sarsuri Dechata. The eyes and the heart are the two middlemen who make it possible for him who get a person into Averis. So the Yetzirah has those. Then you have the various external forces in the world around us. Each one has a Shlita. Each one has a particular power for 1 month, and then it gives way to the next. One. So that's represented by the waves over here, each one being 300 by 300 parsa. Now, so what happens is the sailors, when we say they're walking on the road, the Vilna Gaon continues, it means, in other words, the road represents the road, Baslin and Ba'urcha, represents the way of tzaddikim. As the pasuk says, Ba'urach tzaddikim. So they're saying, you know what? We've been too long. We've been letting the Yetzer Hara do whatever he wants with us. It's time for us to change. It's time for us to start doing tshuva and walk on the road of tzaddikim. Now what happens is, now the Yetzer Hara tries a new tactic. Now he's going to try to make them bali gaiva over it. So he lifts them up, and they come to see the play. They come to see the place of a small star. So they start imagining themselves to be on the level of tzaddikim, who are compared to stars. But really though, we're saying you have a small star over there. It's the size of 40 saw of mustard. 40 saw is a shiur mikveh. So a person can imagine himself that he's already made himself tahor like a mikveh, but that only works only if you have bittul. Like, what do you do with mustard? As Maharsha had pointed out, mustard is bitter. How do you make a useful thing out of it? You have to pound it and crush it. So that representing, in other words, a person has kosis lamor, a person has to crush himself and make himself and get rid of that gaiva.
Who says that?
This is only Garnick who gives this explanation, yeah.
Sounds like the father.
So I don't know. I haven't found very much in Hasidus Chabad, very much, if anything, that addresses these stories of Rabbi Baba Chana. I don't know where to look, but I haven't found any. The little notes I made for myself over here are taken from various other Mephoshim. But yeah. Anyway, so he explains that's the idea. That's what's represented by the 40 saw of mustard. The person imagines himself that he's already made himself tahor like a mikveh, but he doesn't realize that he's still like mussy, still like raw mustard seed, which is bitter, and he hasn't yet refined himself. And now we're saying if we had been lifted any higher, we would have been burnt, because, in other words, what happens? A person becomes a Baal Gaiva, then the next stage is he gets angry that people don't look up to him for what he imagines himself to be. So now one wave calls to the other. Have you left anything undestroyed? In other words, is there anything left of the person that you haven't yet destroyed and turned him into a Rosh Marusha? Is there anything left for me the next month, Yetzer Hara, to do? And the first one answers that, consider the tzaddikim who are compared to sand. So the person has to tell himself, you know what, the tzaddikim are like the sand that constantly holds back the waves, meaning there was a person taka, the Eibishter gave him an ability, the Eibishter gave him the chiruch hafshis, to hold back all those powerful waves and to be a tzaddik. So then, you know, they don't even give in a hair's breadth into the Yetzer Hara. I have to learn to be the same way and not to allow him to trick me in any way, including into gaiva. So, among the various other Mephoshim, just to go briefly, the Kli Yoker has a famous Sefer of Drushas called Oilo Lesefrayim. So he has in there a number of explanations of these Agadta. One of them is, he says that it means that between one period of Xeris and persecution and the next, we do Torah, Avodah, and Gnus Chasadim, and he goes and explains each one of them is represented symbolically by the number 100, so therefore that means in the source of Torah, Avodah, and Gnus Chasadim, then we have 300 parasa between one wave and the next, meaning that the Eibishter gives us a long break between one and the next, and vice versa. If we slacken off on them, then that, just the opposite, it makes that the wave now towers to a height of 300, representing the lack of Torah, Avodah, and Gnus Chasadim. Is how he explains it. I also came across an interesting explanation when I first researched this years ago. Somebody gave an explanation that you taka find the period between major tremendous persecutions and disasters in Jewish history. Very often you've had a period of around 300 years. Working backwards, for example, the most recent one was the Holocaust. About 300 years before that is Zeres Tachatat. About 300 years before that is the Xeris in Spain, and so on and so forth. You work it back all the way to the time of the Churban, you find that in general there was a period, there would be a period of terrible Xeris, and then there would be a long lull, and then approximately, give or take, or a few years, but approximately 300 years later would be the next one. So therefore that's represented by the 300 parasa between one wave and the next.
Crusaders, 900, that was...
What?
Crusades was the
900. Crusades is around 900 years ago, yeah, so that also works with it, yeah.
Interesting.
Okay, so Tavariyakasha Tarid, if you try to add, and now you have 614 instead of 613. Nice. Okay. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula, for days of the Aleph, one of the Polish tzaddikim gave a drasha on the pasuk. We say before venturing, Oz Yomu Vagoyim, Higdol Hashem Lasas Emela. Oz Yomu Vagoyim, then when Mashiach comes, the nations of the world are going to say, Higdol Hashem Lasas Emela. Hashem has done tremendously great things with these Jewish people, and we'll answer them, you know why? Higdol Hashem Lasas Emanu, you know why? Because Hayinu Smechim, in the supposed of the Simcha that we had even in the time of Godus. Continuing with halachas of tzitzis, so we were talking about so the last thing we were talking about is a person puts on his talis cotton in the morning. If he hasn't washed yet, then he puts it on at that point without a bracha, and then he'll say the bracha later on. Or if he's saying, if he's wearing a weird talis later on, then he'll say the bracha on the talis and he mozi the tzitzis with that. Now, if a person is wearing many begodim that each have four corners, and we talked about, I mentioned, for example, the other day, the famous Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael, Chaim Kanfer Steinberg, Zichron Levracha, where he, Taka, was famous for that. He wore many pairs of tzitzis. So all of them are chayiv and tzitzis, even if you put them all on, even if you're wearing them all at the same time, because I'll kind of be dehem on the corners of their garments. That means no matter how many garments there are. If now a person puts them on one after the other and doesn't talk between them, and he intended to do that, then he only makes one bracha, even if he takes off the first one before he puts on the second one. But if then he interrupts between them by talking or with other things, then he's going to have to say a separate bracha for each one. Now that only applies, as in other areas of halacha where we have a hefsek, it's only if the hefsek was not for the purpose of wearing it. Now the same way, for example, we'll learn much later when we get to Hilchos Sudah, for example, about how you're not supposed to talk after washing for bread before hamotzi, but you can say things that are necessary for tzorchei sudah, like give me the salt or give me the knife or whatever. The same way over here, if a person needs to speak in the middle there, for example, give me the next beged, then that's not considered a hefsek, and he wouldn't have to say a second bracha. Then the Altadeva goes on to say that if the person did not intend to put them on all at once, even if later on he does decide to put them on one after the other, but since he didn't intend to begin with, then it's considered a hefsek, and he'd have to make a bracha on the ones that he decided so he'll first he'll make a bracha about on the ones that he intended to put on to begin with, and then only on and then a separate bracha on the ones later on. There's a Kuntras Achron over here where the Altadeva discusses different opinions on this subject. We do find, for example, by Shchita, it's not so. You make one bracha regardless whether you have in mind to do that or not. And there's actually different editions of Magen Avraham that talk about whether he does have to make the second bracha. So then, according to the Altareb, it's explaining that here, when Nimlach, then he does in fact have to make the second bracha, much as would be the case, for example, with brachas on food and other such things. Now, he goes on to say, if he intended to put on, let's say, three garments that have tzitzis. He put on two of them so far. He hadn't put on the third one yet, and he didn't put it on, and then he changed his mind and decided to put on more, so now he doesn't make a new bracha on the ones that they just brought, because he hadn't finished putting on the first set yet. So it's similar to the case. The person hadn't finished his sudah, and they bring him more food, where the din is he doesn't make another bracha.